Hello and welcome to the Mead Chronicle Sports Podcast Talk a Good Game with myself, Tom Gannon, and my co-host, Fred Lynch. We have plenty to discuss today, including Mead's fantastic win over Longford in the opening round of the Leinster Championship, as Dublin awaits next week. And also, the Mead Hurlers have a new manager as well. So we'll touch on a few of them topics and much more to come. How are you getting on, Ferdl?
Good, Tom, yeah. Good, not too bad. Buzzing with excitement and full of enthusiasm about playing Dublin next Sunday.
I'm sure, yeah.
There was actually Desi Farrell was in Pierce Park yesterday. I didn't see him now, but anecdotally I heard somebody saying that Somebody Mead supporters shouted down at him towards the end of the game. Oh. I'd say you're shaking in your boots, Desi. And somebody else says, yeah, it's bloody cold out here. So that was probably the only thing that would be worrying Desi ahead of next Sunday's Leinster quarter final against Dublin in Croke Park. But look, it is what it is. You have to play who's the next team in front of you. And off the back of yesterday's win, Mead can go there with a relative confidence.
I'm sure
it's not confident to the extent that they will expect a victory, but they can be confident of maybe producing a decent performance. One of the issues in the league seemed to be that we weren't firing up front, but we seemed quite watertight at the back, apart from, I think it was 118 or 119 against Donegal and 216 or 17 against Armagh. Just off the top of my head, apart from those big totals, we were quite stable at the back.
Sure.
Whereas we weren't kicking huge scores up front. It was the opposite yesterday.
Yeah.
We kicked 2 or 3.19 and then concede 3.12, which complete in contrast to the league form and how the scoring went for us. But I think I heard somebody described as kind of primary school football towards the end.
Yeah.
Of that Mead Longford game yesterday, and that, you know, there was three goals in a 2 minute period. They went down, they got a goal. Mead went up the other end, and Keane McBride gets a goal, and then straight away from the kick out, they go down again to get another goal. So it was just a messy conclusion to the game, and it's something actually that's happened in Mead games quite a few times during the league, and messy conclusions or stages in the game where they just have a lapse of concentration. And the opponents can score 2, 3, 4 scores in quick succession. But we need to learn how to manage that aspect of the game where, you know, when you see momentum starting to shift, that you can just, you know, goalkeeper can just put the ball on the tee and say, let's calm down here now for a minute. Let the momentum that the opposition are building up, let that die down and let's make sure we win the next ball. Whereas what we tend to do is to try to restart quickly. So even if they concede a sloppy goal or concede a couple of points in a row, they're forever trying to restart quickly and bounce back. It's probably a positive approach.
Yeah.
The best way to bounce back to conceding a score is to try and nick one at the other end. But when an opposition's tail is up, it can backfire on you, which happened to Mead a couple of times yesterday with the concession that got 2-1. Like, they were very, very comfortable. They were never in danger.
Sure.
So from that point of view, it was quite a comfortable performance.
Sure. We'll roll the clip in a few moments of Colm O'Rourke speaking, but he seemed to be touching on a lot of the points that you're speaking about in terms of when he was speaking to the press after, he was speaking about, you know, that kind of messy end to the game and conceding them goals. You know, but still in all, it's never a good sign, I think anyway, to concede 3-12 against a perceived weaker opposition. You can kind of make your own excuses for a low scoring game, conditions, maybe parking the bus and that, but it is a worrying factor in a way, no?
Well, it is if you think, you know, if Longford are scoring 3-12 against you, what are Dublin going to be capable of getting? But when you isolate the 3-12, which I'm sure the Mead team will do their analysis of the game and then look back at how each of the scores materialise. Like, the three goals, if you take them as three separate things, the first one was a big long punt goalwards for a point attempt. I think it was wasn't Jason Matthews, it was one of the other guys took an attempt at a point. It got held up in the wind, and Mead had switched off at the back. Jason Matthews got the ball and he tried to clip it over the bar towards the far post. It ended up getting caught in the wind and sails over Sean Brennan's head. Now, as a goalkeeper, it's a nightmare. It's, it looks like an awful bad goal. It's one of those ones where you go, oh, Jesus, you know, if you saw it sailing over an under-11's head, you'd understand and say, well, they were too small. But just one of those ones that just looped in, easily avoidable. Can't see that happening against... If Dublin were aiming for a point there, it clears the bar by 20 feet, not dips underneath it. The second goal was, a bit, again... Meade got turned over from the kick out, the lost possession, and then Longford just pumped a long ball in, and there was like two defenders, I think it could have been Adam O'Neill and Kieran Caulfield went for the ball along with Sean Brennan. There didn't seem to be anybody claiming possession or coming out. Sean Brennan didn't come out and clear all around him. The ball broke kindly and it ended up in a simple tap in for Mark Hughes.
An easy goal,
as you'd expect with somebody with the name of Mark Hughes, just to be tapping the ball in, a former Man United striker, of course. By the same name, was he just landed kindly in his hands and he finished it easily. And then the third goal, again, was just poor Meade defending, and the ball just broke out to the left, and side-footed, soccer-style finish. The game was long over. The intensity was gone. So, and in amongst those two late goals as well, there was also a point or two. So you're looking at 3-2, 3-3 that probably came in spells of the game where Meade's concentration, where the game was won, they just switched off. Even the goal in the first half, Meade were comfortable at that stage, and it was, I think it was like 1-11 to 6 points or something when Longford got that first goal. At no stage were any of the goals apply, no, at no stage did they apply any pressure on Meade. You would think that if it was a tighter game, if you know, there was something on the line, if it was really going right down to the wire, those scores wouldn't have happened.
I don't think
they would have happened. The concentration levels would have been higher, they would have had to have been higher. The commitment, the hunger to go and win that ball would have been a lot stronger. So I while you would be worried at conceding 3-12 to Longford, I think the manner of it and the circumstance of it and when the scores came, I wouldn't be overly worried about it. Now, we're just as more likely to concede 6-12 against Dublin or 6-20 against Dublin, but it could be in completely different circumstances. But I don't know.
And tell me this much, because obviously every game that was played over the weekend, everyone who went to a game will know how windy it was and how them conditions affected every game up and down the country, I'd say. How did Meade manage them conditions, like in the wind? Did they manage the game well? Were they...
That's what I said with the lads on the We Are Meade podcast as well, like, and I mentioned it in our Match at a Glance piece, it's in the paper tomorrow, that the turning point of the game was probably the coin toss at the beginning. You know, the wind was that strong that whoever had won the coin toss was going to play with the wind, and it was going to be, from a Meade point of view, it was going to be game over at half time. If it was, you really want, neutral would have really wanted Longford to win the coin toss, let them go in at half time 4, 5, 6 points up and see how Meade responded then. As it was, Meade won the coin toss and were brilliant with the wind. Now, as I mentioned in my match report, the wind never kicked a score for anybody, but Meade moved the ball swiftly and accurately, got it into James Condon on his return. I know he came back against Donegal, played against them, he had a broken thumb earlier in the year. He was simply outstanding, unmarkable, 1-6 from play, top scorer for the weekend. Brilliant form. Jordan Morris playing his first game since the Cavan County final last October. I think he scored 4 points or something, or one, I can't remember. Yeah, I think it could have been 4 points. Brilliant. Really well. Played really well as well. Owen Frayne as well. I think between the front, or that three, I should have really brought in the numbers in front of me, but like they had some like 113 or 213 between them, so it was it was good scoring. Yes, sorry, Owen Frayne got a penalty. He, I think he got 4 points from play, 1-1 a penalty and 1 from free. But they were just deadly. Their movement was excellent. Jordan Morris, good to see him back. He has that bit of an X factor that the Meade attack needs. You know, like Dublin have it, Conor Callan, Kerry have it, David Clifford. Mayo obviously had it over the weekend. Ryan O'Donoghue, and you see what he scored against. I know it was against New York, but they all have these heavy scorers. Now, I'm not saying that Jordan Morris is to the level of those boys just yet, but there is a possibility he could get there. But that's how important he is to Meade. He's as important to Meade as Conor Callan is to Dublin, and as Paddy Lynch is to Cavan, and as Ryan O'Donoghue is to Mayo, and David Clifford is to Kerry. You know, he is as important to Meade, and he just, having him back yesterday was brilliant. Ronan Jones was exceptional, driving from midfield. Donal Keoghan was his usual brilliant self in defence. It was great to see Ross Ryan played really well at centre-back as well. So I would be pleased enough with Meade's level of performance, apart from the couple of sloppy moments that led to those long for goals and gave them a bit of oxygen and belief.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, these games, the game against Donegal, which was a game of no consequence for Meade, even the game against Cork before that, game against Cork, game against Donegal, yesterday's game against Longford, and next Sunday's game against Dublin. For me, those games are being used, or at least should be used, as preparation for the summer.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a different kettle of fish altogether. We're going to be in a group of four. I'd say we'll probably be the fourth seeds. So by all intent, for all intents and purposes, we should be the whipping boys of whatever group we're in. But if we can go in, and we'd probably be on a par with whoever the third seed is, and more than capable of taking the scalp of a second seed. So Meade should still be aiming that, you know, produce a result or two in the summer series and see, can we get out of that group? And those four games, the Cork and Donegal game in the league, Longford yesterday and Dublin next Sunday, are prep to fine-tune and hone the skills for that summer football to come. So from that point of view, yes, it was a great worthwhile project.
Sure. Okay. I think at this stage we will run the clip with Colm O'Rourke for the listeners to listen to. When Colm spoke to the press after the match, he touched on a lot of points that failed us to mention ourselves. But we'll run that clip for you now, and then when we come back, we might touch on the Dublin game, and just look ahead to that at the weekend. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, certainly very happy with the forward play, particularly the first half. You know, during the league, it's a well-known fact that we haven't scored enough to win big games. We have found it difficult to get goals, and we've found it difficult to get more than 12 points. So we focused in on that to try, and we wanted to hit 16 or 17 points and get a goal along with. So I suppose from that point of view, we achieved that side of it. We didn't want the idea of letting in three goals on the other side.
The end of the game was a little bit frantic in terms of how the goals were flying in, but just to focus on that first half and the team performance, James Conlon won six, absolutely superb, barely missed, and Owen Frain on the 40s, well, Jordy Morris coming back looking sharp. So as you talk about there, that scoring power was really in evidence today across the forward line.
Yeah, well, we've missed Jordy and Banty from the league, of course, with injuries, and we've been hoping that they would get back because they are natural forwards and natural scorers. So, you know, I was delighted to see Banty coming back, and he had an interrupted preparation, broke a thumb early in the year, and has worked really, really hard. And Jordy, of course, hadn't played a game now since, I think, the Cavan final last October. So both of them to come out in their first game, it was asking a lot of them probably to put them in like that, but they fairly well responded. But they were going well in training, so we decided just give them their head.
In terms of the goal that went into the first half, it was a bit of a freak thing over Sean Brennan's head, the wind maybe caught it, but the ones at the end, would you have been any way concerned about the defensive lapses, or was it just the way the game was kind of gone a bit ragged at that stage?
Well, we would be very concerned about that. We had set out at half time to have a very tight defence for the second half and to keep them 2 points. So, you know, again, we look at that. There's a few individual mistakes, and lads are disappointed in there with them. There's no shouting or roaring or anybody getting over the top about the performance, because I think they realise that there was a lot of sloppiness there, lack of concentration, and we need to do better.
Just finally for me, Dublin next week, it's a huge task at the best times of week turnaround. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that, but as I said to Kieran Caulfield a moment ago, these are the sort of games that Meade want to be playing in, and the big day against Croke Park, or against Dublin in Croke Park, is obviously one of those.
Oh, absolutely. I was saying to the lads in there, actually, I said, like, since every young fella in Meade grew up, what do you want to do? You want to go to Croke Park, play on the Meade team, and play against Dublin in a big game? And I said, we're getting it all together. So we look forward to it. I know it's a big task, and it's a young team, but we're getting better all the time, and we're not going to playing out of fear. We're going to play with confidence.
How do you make sure that happens, Colin? Because it's obviously a very young team, and we're seeing the form that the Dubs are in at the minute. How do you make sure the team go out with that bit of confidence that they've got?
Well, I think they're naturally confident players anyway, and I think the big thing is that they do see themselves now that there has been an improvement over the last 6 months. I think a lot of league games we could see snatches of it, particularly say Kildare, Cavan, Louth games for 20 minutes in each game. We played very well, and okay, we didn't get results in other games, but we got what we wanted out of the league. And training has gone very well. They've worked really, really hard, and you could even see in the last week that things had improved again.
Yeah, you've been able to, with the question of having Dunbar football, you've been able to take a long-term approach to injuries. Am I right in saying that you've got a camp coming up as well in early May or late April for a bit of preparation in Portugal? So you're able to actually take a long-term approach to this year. Does that help going into this game?
It does. It sometimes we were flying by the seat of our pants with taking chances in league games and trying to ensure we stayed up and not rush fellas back. And it looks as if it's paid off now at this stage. And the hope now, of course, is that with everybody back fit and well, and with Conor Gray maybe back within 3 or 4 weeks, that we'll get a bit stronger again, and that we'll have a better team for the Sam Maguire series.
Last one for me. The elements today, it created just a mad environment for a game of football. You must have been delighted with the accuracy in the first half. But with the relentless nature of the schedule, will you read into this game too much, or will you just crack on with preparations?
I'd say we'll crack on. We came down to win, and the conditions made it very difficult. But as you say, the forward accuracy was very good. It is a significant improvement in anything we've achieved before. So we'll take a lot of heart from that at least we can score. What we want to try and ensure is Dublin don't get 3 goals in the first 10 minutes next week, because if we defend like that, the game would be over early.
Colin, just in terms of the venue for next week, was there any possibility of having it in Navan, or was it always going to be Croke Park? Because I think if Longford had won today, it would have been back here next week.
I'm not exactly sure. I didn't ask any questions about it. There are people with blazers that make all those decisions. So anyway, as a Mead man who was used to going to Croke Park to play Dublin, it's where we always wanted to play them, and we want to get our young lads thinking and acting like that, and going to Croke Park, and of course not just going for the spin, but going to win big games there. That has to be the big ambition for us.
You took McCoslow off at half time. Was that a continuation on of the viral infection that he had prior to Donegal, or was it just tactical?
No, he wasn't feeling well again during the week, and he wasn't feeling well at half time, so it was a matter of necessity. We didn't think anywhere that he would have been finishing the game, but rather than say put him on, we decided we'd start him and take him off. But we took him off a bit earlier than we had intended.
You mentioned there these group need to get used to going to Croke Park looking to win big matches. Can you genuinely look to do that next Sunday, or is it a bit too early in their development, do you think?
Well, it's early in the development, but sometimes you have to get up and put your chest out and put your best foot forward. You know, when is the right time to go to Croke Park? There's none. You have to just get on with it and start winning big games there. That's what defines you as a man, as a footballer, as a warrior in Mead, is to be able to go to Croke Park and beat Dublin, take them on toe-to-toe. So, these fellas are as ambitious as any other players, or just as ambitious as the team I played with or the team Trevor played with. They want to go there. They want to do that as well.
Now, that was Colm O'Rourke speaking to various members of the media after
the
match.
Plenty of us were there. We were we ended up huddled in the wind tunnel under the stand at Pierce Park. It was kind of like a free-for-all, and Colm had done a few interviews before that, so by the time we got to him, he had well spoken out at that stage, but he had still had a few interesting things to say there. And
absolutely, yeah.
You could hear Tommy Rooney of Off the Ball asking him, you know, that same point that I was making about using these games as preparation for the summer.
And sure.
So they're timing the run to perfection. They have everybody back from injury now, with the exception of Conor Gray, who could be back for the summer series. So he'd be a huge addition.
Huge
addition. Yeah. Both metaphorically and physically speaking, he'd be a huge addition in there. But it's Yeah, and there is that Colin would get the blood and the hair standing on the back of your neck about the thoughts of going to Dublin and playing, or going to Crow Park to play the Dubs. You know, he says it's where every Mead footballer wants to be, and if you have any ambitions to be a warrior,
yeah.
That, you know, that using words like that definitely stirs the blood. Sure. Seems a bit odd to say that you can look forward to it, but you can look forward to going to Crow Park, and hopefully the Mead supporters will go up and support the team. We're going definitely more in hope than in expectation next Sunday. And it's often the hope that kills you.
Especially
when you're following Mead for the last 20 years, it is the hope that kills you, because you've had so many false dawns. But I don't think this is a false dawn. I don't think it's quite the dawn yet. We're probably still in the very early stages of morning time, that the sun isn't quite rising on the capabilities or the potential of this Mead team just yet. But games like next Sunday will bring this team on a lot.
Yeah.
Provided they take learnings from it, they produce a performance that they're consistent and focused and don't suffer lapses in concentration like they did last Sunday. But if they can go in and produce a 70-minute performance against Dublin next Sunday, and that gets them to under the bookies handicap odds, I think, of -13. So Dublin are at 13-point favourites for Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
They're 33-1 on. So Mead are unbackable, really. But I think if Mead can go in and give a good account for themselves, I'd be more than happy coming away from Crow Park next Sunday.
Sure. Not to put you on the spot with this figure, I was trying to think myself there, and I should have looked up there myself, but there wouldn't have been too many of these Mead players who have gone into a game against Dublin in the last update. Like, we didn't play them last year in Crow Park. It's a new experience for the likes of Owen Frayne. Obviously Donald Cowden has played them, and Jordan Morris, I think, had a game against them. But is that an advantage or a disadvantage that you haven't been there and gotten a fair baiting as other Mead teams have?
Well, I'm not too sure on the numbers. We could probably look that up.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure on the numbers of the last Mead team that played Dublin, but I know even we'd say from the Longford game yesterday compared to the team that played Longford in 2021. So that was only 22-20. That's only two campaigns ago as well.
Yeah,
so there was only four Mead players. So you had Morris, Banty, Conlon, Matty Costello, and Kilgan.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember off the top of my head. They're the only four players. So to everybody else, this will be a new experience.
Yeah.
But they're no fools. So they do. It's not as if they've had their heads buried in the sand and they don't know how good Dublin are. So your own friends and your Adam O'Neills and your Kieran Caulfields, Jack O'Connor, might have played against them before when he came in. These guys are going to be fully aware of what Dublin are capable of, but they're not going in weighed down by any expectation. They're not going in weighed down with the scar tissue of a 21-point hammering like we got in 2020.
Yeah.
Like that night in Crow Park in 2020 was horrendous. It was, 321 or 322 to 9 points, 321 to 9 points. It was a humbling night. And the Meads, as we said, since 2010, they've played Mead and Dublin have met 8 times since Mead last won the Leinster, and Dublin's average margin of victory is 11.5 points. Now, obviously, that 21-point win brings that up, because there was a 3-point win for Dublin in 2012, there was a 4-point win, there was a 6-point win, which brings the averages down under the 11. So there have been times when Dublin have just cut loose and tore us to shreds, and if they produce a performance like they did against Tyrone towards the end of the league, you would be fearful.
Yeah.
Probably saw enough from what Derry were capable of. I know we're a good bit off where Derry are, but Derry have proved that if you stand up physically to them and if you take your opportunities and run at them, that you could, you know, you might be able to rattle them. That's been the eternal optimist in me, that thinking that we can do something capable of rattling them. But, you know, Brian Fenton is going to be suspended anyway. I think he got a straight red card in that league final against Derry, so he'll miss the game. Could also be one or two others that'll be out. It'll be interesting to see what they do with their goalkeeping situation. I would imagine Evan Comerford will retain the number one shirt. Shane, who was the full back guy, he was very good, I thought, against Derry. But I think he can be got at. I think Matt Costello stays close to goals. Matt has a physical advantage on him there. I think it could be. I think that in the forwards, if we can get ball quick into our forwards and they can find half a yard of space,
it's
a lot easier said than done. Our forwards could make it. I would be worried about how quick Dublin can transition and get the ball up to lads like Conor Callaghan. Paul Mannion starts, Kilkenny gets on the ball. They just have threats from all over the field. I would worry about how quickly they can turn from defence into attack, and are we going to be capable of getting back to put up the roadblocks in time? That's where I think Dublin could wear us down.
Well, that has always probably been there in a factor in terms of how quickly they can transition. And you would have heard Conor O'Rourke being asked about the Croke Park and the Nav and factor.
Yeah.
I think that is a factor in Croke Park, how you can quickly, because you can go out. I've heard people talk about it before. Young lads going out in Croke Park for the first time and they're absolutely knackered after 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dublin's ability to efficiently get the ball up the pitch kind of negates that a little bit.
The energy that builds in Croke Park, it can feed some teams or it can suck the life out of others. And that's what happens after 10, 15 minutes. You can feel as if you're dead on your feet.
Yeah.
And it's in that spell. And that's what Dublin do. Dublin sniff a weakness, and in the space of 5, 6, 7 minutes, they can hit 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, and it's game over.
Yeah.
Next thing all, they'll just slip back into cruise control and they'll pull away from you.
Yeah.
So Meath have to be conscious of that they go out and enjoy the occasion, play the football. You're representing Meath, you're living the dream. There's 15 lads that start the game next Sunday. Are living the dream of all us wannabe footballers that would give our right arm and our left leg and all that we have belonging in our pockets to pull on a green jersey for Meath in Croke Park against Dublin. They're going to live that dream next Sunday. Mm. I just hope they appreciate it, value the position they're in, value the jersey, and understand who they're representing when they do go out onto that field, that it's not just themselves or their family or their clubs or the badge on their chest, that they're representing an entire county who's they're living our dreams. We're living vicariously through what their achievements are, and they need to go out there with, I'm not saying go out with no fear, but you know, go out with a positive approach, and let's see where it takes us.
Yeah.
Conor O'Rourke did say after the game up in Donegal that, you know, within 2-3 years this Meath team will be good enough to compete with any team. So there's no expectation there now.
Yeah.
The expectation will be there in 2 or 3 years' time. So long as Meath take learnings from the game on Sunday.
Yeah,
that's for me, that's the main thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's a good way to wrap up the Dublin Meath chat. Moving on then towards, you know, last week we spoke in detail about the saga that has been going on with the Meath hurling manager situation. They've since appointed a new manager, and do you want to talk us through kind of how this saga is developing?
I don't know if I'm any wiser as to how it's developing, or we know what way it's developing. And Kilmessan Stephen Clinch is going to be the new boss. He was a selector under Saoirse Bulfin last year when they won the league and the Christy Ring Cup. So he has that connection, the connectivity with the players that were there. But it's still a huge turnover of players. He had stepped away at the start of this year. You know, he was I think he could have been building a house or something, or changed, I'm not sure, something involving his job anyway. But he has taken a step back. He wasn't able to commit the time, but they've approached him and asked him, you know, for these couple of games in Joe McDonough, would he be in a position to step in and fill the void left by Saoirse Bulfin? And Tispin, as he's known, has said he will do that. And look, at he's a very knowledgeable man. Not only is he probably in the top 3, 4, or 5 of Meath's finest ever hurlers, some would say he's probably the finest ever. He has a superb knowledge of the game, his reading of it, both as a player and as a coach, has been exceptional. He's young enough that, you know, he's in touch with the modern game. He knows how it's played. He's brought in a good coach, a Jubilee Cup winning coach with Kiltale, and Trevor Cummins has gone in there with him as well. So, and the team does have, you know, still has the backbone of that successful team, and players like Seanie Gerty is still there. Simon Ennis is there. Charlie Ennis.
Yeah.
James Kelly, Padge O'Hanrahan, Sean Quigley, of course, is one of the joint captains as well. Mickey Burke is still on the panel. You know, so it's still the backbone of a strong team with good young players who have shone for the under 20 team, who had a great win at the weekend over Derry.
Yeah.
And they advance now to the next stages of the under 20. So, you know, Tom and Dara Shine are two key
yeah.
men in that, and
yeah.
could make a huge impact with the senior team as well. So, yeah. look, it's going to be a difficult Joe McDonagh campaign for Tispin,
yeah.
and
yeah. and not easy to come in. I suppose we kind of briefly touched on the rumours that were circulating around the situation with in regard to Saoirse Bull from stepping back from the role. Not easy to come into that environment, but you know it might take a man with of the stature of Stephen Lynch to gel them lads together, you know.
Yeah, well, I think the players have obviously had their say now,
yeah.
And at the risk of sounding vulgar or whatever, they've got the changes that they looked for.
Yeah,
there is a man now in place that they want to get in behind, so. Simple thing now is to piss and get off the pot for the meat hurlers. You know, you either get down and work hard, because there's no easy games in this Joe McDonagh. The first game against Down in Ballycran in the 21st of April, I think, is when it's due to play it, in around that weekend anyway. That is the only thing that should be on their minds at this stage. So everything has to be put to the side now. You know, Martin O'Halloran stepping aside as chairman of the Hurling Committee as well was also a big blow for Hurling and Mead from a wider perspective. But in terms of the senior team going on and playing in the Joe McDonagh, the game against Down, it should be their be-all and end-all and their total focus right now. So forget about everything that's gone on in the past. Let's move on now and get the win up in Ballycran, which I don't know when the last time Mead team won up in Ballycran, but it's not today nor yesterday.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good while ago.
Yeah, fair enough. So then moving on to the underage setup and the underage teams playing in the next week. And I suppose that starts tomorrow night with the under 20 footballers playing against Dublin.
Probably a couple of, there are big games coming up, but for the under 20 footballers, both Meath and Dublin, they're both through to the next stage.
Okay.
So that game tomorrow night is a bit of a dead rubber. It's probably still one that they might be keen to lay down a marker in, because the possibility is that they could meet again later on the Leinster Championship, the under 20s. I know the Meath team that bet, who they beat in the first round. Jeez, has gone from my head here again. It's terrible. But Bet West Mead, sorry.
In the
opening round last week, only had five of the minor team that had won the All-Ireland 3 years ago, and none of the starting six forwards from that All-Ireland win in 2021 actually started for the under-20s this year, which would be unusual. But a lot of players to come back. So the Mead under-20s are strong. They might be keen on laying down a marker in that one. On Tuesday night in Parnell Park, but it is a dead rubber in terms of you know, denying anybody progression to the next round. Probably the big game of the week from the underage perspective is the minor footballers have to go to Mullingar on Saturday to play Westmead, and after losing to Kildare in the first round and Louth last week in Hunterstown, they're really up against it. They have to beat Westmead.
Yeah.
Simple as that. If they lose to Westmead, they're out of the Leinster Championship. If they win, they're in a preliminary quarter final, and the level of performance in the first two games doesn't augur well for them. A few good young players. Pat Crawley has done a lot of their scoring for them. but they just haven't. They haven't fulfilled the potential that was expected of this minor team. I know a lot of people say, well, maybe there wasn't a whole lot expected, but there's always an expectation on Meath minor football teams because they tend to do well in the Gerry Riley at under 16. So then when they step up, there is an expectation on them to do well in the Leinster minor. But that hasn't happened with this team, but they do have that shot of redemption next Saturday in Mullingar against Westmeath, where nothing less than a win will do. If they do, if they are beaten, they go into a tier two or a tier three competition. And I know for a fact there's no appetite there for Meath to be in a tier two, tier three competition in football. Meath need to be aiming towards the top as winning All Ireland minor 3 years ago. Hopefully going to be pushing on for an under 20 this year. And with progress starting to be seen at senior level, operating in tier two or tier three of a minor competition isn't where we need to be.
No, absolutely. And then obviously, you know, that was a very, it was a poor enough performance against Kildare the first day, wasn't it?
Bet by 12 points.
So look, they'll obviously be looking to bounce back from that, and bounce back from the Louth performance. But there is, you know, as you said, there's a historical kind of relevance to Meath minor performances, and hopefully, you know, they bounce back from that and play a performance. So elsewhere during the week, we had Tarleton Cup games, had a FES Cup final, a Tarleton Cup final,
trophies and cups already,
All over the county. And you were at the FES Cup final.
We were up, myself and Jimmy were out and about at games, and I was following seeing how we were all getting on, and I was kind of biting my nails going, Jesus, my game looks like it's going to go to extra time here. And thank God, from my selfish point of view, Andy Tormey popped up with a late goal to give Dunmore Ashburn a win over Simonstown. And then I saw that Jimmy's game went to extra time, I think. In the Coronabonia, or did it? Was definitely a tight game anyway. And then your one went extra time and penalties in the Tailteann Cup between Slane and Menalty. It was a late night for us all last Wednesday night, but you know, it's good to be there to cover the cup finals. And Dunmore Ashburn will be delighted to get the year off to a win. They held on to beat Simonstown in Simonstown last Wednesday night, so the weather conditions weren't great. There'd been a heavy spill of rain just before throw-in. But Simonstown, very defensive team, and had set up that way and made it very difficult for Dunmore Ashburn to try and get scores on the board. And then when they did try to break, Dunmore Ashburn got players back in behind the ball as well. So it wasn't a game for the purists, and it certainly tested my desire to be out at football matches on a Wednesday night. But it did liven up in the closing stages. I must say I had a huge amount of sympathy, and I have a lot of sympathy for Sean Brennan, who seemed to be getting finger pointed at for some of the goals that Meath conceded against Longford. I had a huge amount of sympathy for Robbie Burlingham with Simonstown. It was, you know, a long ball in, just the conditions, he struggled to hold on to it, and Andy Tormey just pounced on it and managed to divert the ball to the net. And there was a few more scores after that, but
not a man you want to see bearing down on you. Andy Tormey.
Andy Tormey bearing down with all guns blazing. He'd come off the bench actually and made a telling impact and got the touch for the goal. And I said there was a few more scores after it, but that goal, a goal is always going to win a tight game like that, and that proved decisive. But special mention to young Aaron Farley for Simonstown. Was unbelievable. I thought he was brilliant. Kicked a few great points in the game. Was a real attacking threat for a team that has relied heavily on lads like Podge McKeever and Sean Tobin down through the years. It was great to see, and even the likes of Andy Carney, you know, they've relied on those boys for scores, heavy scoring down through the years. So to see Aaron Farley coming up with 4 points, I think he scored, he was very good. Breen Conlon was excellent in midfield as well. Stephen Moran was reliable as ever at full back, but for Dunmore Ashburn, for them to get the win, Brian Menton really driving it on from midfield. You can see his experience there. But they were just a solid, probably more potent outfit. Connor Carton was very good at centre back. Andy Colgan kicked a couple of good points as well from frees, long distance frees, shows the benefit of having a keeper that's well capable of kicking long range frees. So Ashburn were good, and when Brian Menton was picking up the trophy at the game, he says that he was saying, you know, let this be the first of a good year for them. So
yeah,
you know, they did well last year, got out of their group by hook or by crook, they got out of their group and managed to get by St Colin Kills despite the floodlight failure and screen in the quarterfinals and made it all the way to the semi final. And you know, some really good quality players, they're more than capable of causing a few upsets later on in the summer. So
yeah,
the scene is set, and in the current Nabonia, then Mead Hill managed to get their hands on a bit of silverware with victory over Oldcastle as well.
Yeah.
Jimmy Gagan was at that one. Unfortunately, Jimmy's not on the podcast. Yeah. So
They'd have intermediate ambitions again this year. I know there was a few good teams in that intermediate championship last year, but they surely have ambitions again to go well this year.
Yeah, well, probably the last couple of years, we have said this before, that before even last year, you know, 2-3 years ago, Trim were the standout team in the intermediate championship. Then the following year, Dunshaughlin were the standout team in the intermediate championship. And since then, it's become kind of a 4 or 5 horse race.
Absolutely,
And now with Rakenny gone out of it as well, I'm not sure if Manalvi who are coming down from senior, if they're going to be capable of making an impact in it.
Yeah.
But you still have Dalit Bellistown that are going to be there, but right up there will be Meadhill and Oldcastle again.
Yeah. And St Pat's as well.
The likes of St Pat's, who were beaten by Trim actually, a weakened Trim team in the league. So, but I reckon that they could come good, but I think Meadhill definitely laid down a marker the other night.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, from talking to, they have a few representatives on the national media, that we do meet out and about on the beat there, Donegal Boyle and Tommy Rooney.
Yeah.
So we do see the boys out and about, and they're really enthusiastic about what's happening in Meadhill. So they're good judges of football, the two boys. And if they can see things moving positively for Meadhill, then they're to be believed.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Tailteann Shield final, or Tailteann Cup final then was...
Yeah.
Your punishment on a Wednesday night.
Yeah. No, it was actually a highly entertaining affair, despite the conditions. There was a few takeaways that I took from the game. One of the more important ones, or one of the things that stood out to me definitely, was that St. Vincent's at Ardtash have an exceptional young player in Michael McIver, who was featuring on that Ashford Community School team as well. This man is, you know, he has the build of a 27, 28 year old. He's a big lad, but he has got, for his age, got a superb footballing brain. He's
obviously too old for minor. Need minors this
That's
year.
That's what I was wondering, because he's not involved in any me underage.
And he's obviously maybe seen as being too young maybe for the under 20s.
Yeah. But there was times on the pitch during the night that he was just, you know, it's where he had the most experience on the pitch.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He just using his football and brain, just the way he was moving, just the way he was able to read the game. I thought he was exceptional. He was unfortunate to be on the losing side of it, and unfortunate that he missed a free to win it, and then he missed a penalty in the penalty shootout as well.
Penalties in the GAA.
That's why I was on the command next. That was my second takeaway. I don't know what your feeling is, and that was the first game that I covered that went to penalties, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really good conclusion to the game, and a really good way to
I have no problem with that, using penalties to decide a game that has to be decided. If they're the rules that are in there, game has to be decided on the night, no problem with that. But the standard of penalty taken in the GAA compared to you'd see in a soccer match, it's different. And myself and Davey Risman are actually talking about this. We don't know whether it's because are the goalkeepers a different animal in the GAA, in that a goalkeeper in the GAA isn't necessarily meant to be a shot stopper.
Sure.
That they're more, you know, they're there more for their kickouts, maybe their handling and their link up play. joining up further at the field. Therefore, some think, well, maybe it's easier to score a penalty in the GAA.
Yeah.
Or is the penalty spot a little bit further out in GAA, or the goals a little bit bigger? I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people seem to make hard work of it in the penalty shootouts.
So are you saying that it's easier or harder to score a penalty as a GAA player?
I think it's easier.
You think it's easier?
Even though you very rarely see, you might see penalty shootouts in soccer going to 8-7 or 9-8 or something. You mightn't see them going that high. I would imagine it's easier because goalkeepers tend not to commit to a side. Yeah. I think if you can bury one into a corner.
Yeah, I understand that. And I suppose where I'd look at it is, it depends on the magnitude of the game, of course. But even there, you're nice. Do you know, it's not easy in a soccer game or a GAA game to step up and take a penalty in them circumstances. There was a good crowd at that game the other night, and it went deathly silent every time. A fella stood up to take a penalty.
They want the nerve of a Mo Salah in Old Trafford yesterday.
It's
a different type of pressure.
It's a different type of pressure, but. You know, and then if it's in an All Ireland quarter final or something, it's a different level altogether. Then, like,
well, we saw it last year. Like, you look at Armagh last year, weren't Armagh beaten in two shootouts last year? One in All Ireland quarter final, one in Ulster final.
Was it
Ulster final they were bet in by Derry, or an Ulster semi final they were bet in by Derry in a penalty shootout?
And then
they were bet again in an All Ireland quarter final or second quarter final.
I think they're. No, I might be wrong. Was it similar the year before? I know they went to extra time against Galway the year before.
I think they were better next time. But they had two losses after penalty shootouts last year. So, it is a cruel way to lose. But look at the same way as I said about Simonstown, Dunmore Ashbourne game in the Fetch Cup. Defending is an art and a skill in the game as well. Same as penalty. Scoring a penalty is an art or a skill in the game. Saving one is an art or a skill in the game. So it's just who's keeps the composure and does it. But the Tolchin Shield was the other final at the weekend. It was last week, and that went to Minolti. They retained the Tolchin Shield with victory over Cortown in Cortown. So I actually think, am I right in saying that all four finals last Wednesday night?
Yeah.
Were won by the away team. So Simonstown were beaten by Dunmore Ashbourne. Mead Hill bet Oldcastle in Millbrook.
Slane
bet St Vincent's in Ardcat. Minolti bet Cortown in Cortown. So much for a home venue being an advantage. Four cups going to the visiting team. It dispels that myth of maybe having home advantage being an advantage, or having a home venue for a game being an advantage. But look at it, was there's thankfully no more finals to keep us out this week. We do have that Meath Dublin game in Parnell Park tomorrow night, which we'll bring coverage of. It'll be on our website tomorrow evening, the match report.
Anything else featuring in the paper this week?
I think we have to give a special mention to Appoy Rugby Club, who won their first silverware. You had the joys of going. The Metro League Division 11 mightn't be the most valued piece of silverware in Leinster branch.
But it meant
a huge amount to Appoy.
Absolutely. And you know, the name of this man is after a statement, but I do want to give a special shout out to the out half for that boy.
Eddie Kirby.
My God, he put in a fantastic. He's only been playing rugby 12 months. And in them wind, he was kicking it deep. He was finding touch. Do you know what I mean? And it's not easy. And
a fine footballer now, Eddie.
Right, okay,
Very fine footballer.
Not easy in a rugby game to be a kicker in very windy conditions.
No.
And you put in a serious out half performance, and there's a difference on the day.
Beat Royal College of Surgeons 12-10.
RCSI 12-10, scored 12 points in the first half, and then RCSI scored 10 points in the second half.
Game of two halves. And also give a mention to Ashbourne, who have qualified for their second Provincial Towns Cup final in 3 years. They were relegated actually from the Leinster League Division 1A last week, lost out in a relegation playoff, but they bounced back in style this week. They beat Carlow, I think, County Carlow Rugby Club, yeah, in Kildare, 22-24. They have been leading the whole way from what I can gather. Unfortunately, the Ashburn Rugby Club have stopped sending us in reports. They used to be one of the most reliable PROs. Bill Duggan used to always send stuff into us. Unfortunately, we haven't heard much from them at all this year, but just from doing a little bit of research on the semi-final, they played quite well and they went 12-0 up. I think Carlow got a try back to 12-5 at half-time. And then Ashburn went 17-10, I think, again.
Mm, yeah.
But Carlow came back and managed to go 22-17 up.
Yeah, yeah.
With 5 minutes to go, so it looked like it was going to be a heartbreak for Ashburn, but Ashburn got a late try.
Yeah.
And then they scored a conversion off that try, which I think it was probably Gavin Kennedy. I know he had been kicking for them earlier in the game, I presume he was still kicking. To nail the conversion to win 24-22. So it's great to see them. They will play Tullow in 2 weeks' time, the defending champions Tullow, in the Provincial Towns Cup. It's a great competition for junior clubs in Leinster. It's probably the most prestigious rugby cup for the junior clubs in the country,
sure,
the Leinster Provincial Towns Cup. And it really is. It's held in high esteem. I remember Navan winning it a few occasions and huge celebrations out there, and Ashburn have also won it recently in the recent past, so they will be hoping to end the year on a high. So yeah, well done to them on reaching the final, and hopefully they'll get their PR ship back on the ocean waves again.
Yeah, and Navan secured safety as well.
Had a big win and finished off the season well. I think maybe three wins in a row.
Yeah,
including against Nina Ormond, who won the division 2A of the All Ireland League. So Navan, I think, ended up finishing fifth in the league, which for right up until the last couple of games they were in relegation trouble, needing to win.
Yeah,
I think they needed to win two of their last four games to survive.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were against teams in the upper half of the table, but they ended up winning them all.
Yeah.
Special words there for Lee Jackson and David Clark. Yeah. I think they're two players that are retiring at the end of this year for Navan, giving great service to the club over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
And they played their last games for Navan in the win over Ballymena. So they're safe in All-Ireland League Division 2A.
Yeah, and a fantastic club to deal with as well. Do you know what I mean? From our perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Craig Williamson is probably he's definitely one of the leading PROs out there. We've some great PROs in the GA as well. We've a lot improving, and a lot of the clubs have started sending stuff to us, and you can really see how the PR in a lot of the clubs have really started to improve in recent weeks. But Craig Williamson is definitely up there with the top heroes in the county, and so long as we always say it, if we can scratch their back and they can scratch ours, we'll help each other out as much as we possibly can in terms of coverage in the paper. But we're delighted for Navan and delighted for Ashburn, not so much for the relegation, but delighted to see them in the Towns Cup final.
Yeah 100%. That's a good way to wrap it up with that message, Fergal, unless you have any other business to
I think that's all. There was a great night at homecoming for Liam Foley Castle Arch last Friday night. Jimmy Gagan was at it, so we have coverage of that in this week's Chronicle and a few photographs from the homecoming. So well done again to Liam Foley on his success at the World Down Syndrome Games, winning 2 gold medals. So brilliant from his point of view. Trying to think if there's anything else.
After we went off air, or after we recorded the podcast last week, Tom Dibney won the Irish Grand National.
Yes, of course.
With intense raffles, so well done to him.
Second win in the Irish Grand National, of course, after Liam Navarney a few years ago, probably over a decade ago, 2012. As somebody I put up, Trim based trainer Tom Gibney, and someone said he's not from Trim. I'm well aware that he's not from Trim. That's why I said he's Trim based.
Yeah.
So he's operating out of Caprani Stables there out to Kildalki Road, if anybody knows them, how at Trim. They were used to be home to Gordon Elliott years ago. They're the former stables of Barry Kelly. I think Barry was a great trainer out of those as well. So actually, and just a mention as well of for Paddy Donegan, the Quebecan racecourse manager, died suddenly over the weekend. So
right.
Our sympathy to his friends and family. Paddy is always a gentleman to deal with, and even though Kilbegan Racecourse in Westmead, he'd be ringing here looking to get as much publicity for the race meetings happening there, and he'd always be sending in free tickets and asking how everybody is. So, you know, very desperately sad to hear the passing of Paddy.
Done an incredible job with Kilbegan. That is a really nice track.
Brilliant job. Really sad news. Our sympathies to his family and his friends. Absolutely. So, you know, don't want to end in the podcast on a downer, but just wanted to remember Paddy, and we look forward to next week's podcast, hopefully with more positive news of coming from Croke Park, but we'll see. We won't hold our breath on that one.
100%. So we'll wrap it up there, folks. You've been listening to Talk a Good Game with myself, Tom Dannon, and Ferdinand Lynch. So thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've listened to another edition of the Meat Chronicle Sports Podcast, Talking Good Games. Say hi!